down.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Welcome back to the Jeff Force Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Wednesday morning to you. Jam-packed program planned for you today. Congressman Mo Brooks coming up here shortly. We also got former Congressman Parker Griffin and from Yale Hybrid News, Sean Ross. But joining us now, making time for us, very appreciative of that, Representative Mike Holmes represents the folks up around Elmore County, Wetumpka, to be precise. Representative, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning to you also.
Thank you. Thank you for making time. Real quick, I know the business of the legislature awaits you right now, but I want to get you on to talk about a couple of things. First off, the SB 97, I guess it's the Whatley bill that would curb some of the powers of the executive. It's made its way through the Senate. It sits in the House. I was talking to one of your colleagues yesterday, insisted that we need to get a conversation about this and that get this thing rolling in the House. First off, to kind of tell us about what that is from your perspective and then where we're heading now.
Okay. Let me say that SB 97 is a companion bill to my HB 241. They are identical. Both bills are sitting in a committee now, and I've not even seen the lineup of which committee the SB 97 is in. I have not had a chance to go in to see if Allison has it posted this morning. Yesterday afternoon, it did not, but it should be assigned a committee by this morning. You mentioned that this bill is designed to reduce the powers of the executive branch in the case of emergencies, state of emergency declarations. I want to start off by saying I come from the corporate world my whole career, and nobody appreciates the need for quick action and power on big decisions, emergency decisions. And I think the governor is our logical person in this state. And this has nothing to do with the current governor. This is just looking forward that we've had enough grumbling and complaints and real concerns among our constituents that we need to look at reining this in, a law that hasn't been, it's in existence for over 70 years. And I think times have changed a little bit. We seem to get a pandemic about every 100 years, and that seems to be the one that shook it up so much. Otherwise, during tornadoes and hurricanes and such, oil spills, all these, the current law seems to work pretty well. But this is different. This is a different animal. So that's the why behind this bill. Again, the idea is to trim the executive power somewhat. We started off with a 14-day declaration and negotiated with the governor's office, as you would expect. And this now sits at 45 days before they would have to come to the legislature for approval to continue that declaration after 45 days. That's pretty much it. There's some other incidentals. They're in there as well. Some different methods of the power of the head officer, the commissioner of the secretary commissioner, whichever he is, of the Department of Public Health. Powers are delineated, clarified a little bit too. A lot of people were troubled by that. So that's a pretty, as quickly as I know how to say it, is what it tries to do.
And I know you mentioned you had discussions with the governor's office about this at all. Did they any reception from them?
Well, we came to sort of an uneasy peace. That's the best way I know to say it, Jeff, is that they negotiated some of the language, some of the timetables that we already talked about, and they are not going to endorse the bill. I mean, anything that clips the wings of the executive branch, they're not going to endorse. But I think it's like I said, sort of an uneasy piece that hopefully we can get it through and get it to the governor's desk.
Do you think it, looking at how it's done, the knock on that was from the governor that you can't rely on the legislature to act quick enough in these emergency situations. On the other hand, proponents of the bill say, hey, we've been at this a year, and we were under an emergency order for a year. So certainly some point in time you could have found time to assess the situation. Does that, I mean, is finding that right balance seems to be the key.
And that's exactly right. We even without special sessions, we're in here for about a third of the year. So that gives you a pretty good shot of if an emergency is going to happen, that it could happen during the time we're actually here. Otherwise, we have a very powerful and respected group called Legislative Council. And I can't sit here and name you all the members of that, but a lot of legislators are on that. The leadership of the legislature is on that committee. And they would be an extension of the power of the legislature in case we were not there. Or the second option would be a special session. To call if like this one, it was a powerful enough incentive with a state of emergency that was very threatening to our citizens, then obviously that would be the way to go, would be a special session. But again, now with that period has been extended to 45 days, so in this bill, that's makes it less likely to have to call a special session. If you couple that with a third of the year we're already in session, and add another 45 days of that, you're getting almost a half a year that's covered already. So maybe you wouldn't have to have a special session, but it's possible. It could be done.
Well, in this circumstance, you would have to do the special session. There just seemed to be a reluctance from the governor to do a special session. Even with the three bills that you guys passed very early in the session with the taxation, economic development, and the liability protection. So, you couple that with, you know, I guess at some point you'd have to have a governor that would be willing to impanel the legislature. And I guess the hurdle there would be, would it be safe or not?
That's a good question. I don't think we know. We're kind of uncharted waters, and we're trying to do the best we can to get a better handle on it than we had this last 18 months.
Well, you mentioned Governor Ivey, that, you know, it wasn't a knock on her, but are there things, and I think maybe even she would acknowledge some of them, that could have gone a little bit better than they had this last time around?
There's no question. I think one that comes to mind, front of mind immediately, is the getting the vaccine out didn't go well at all. Press releases I saw yesterday that we were ranked dead last in the nation. Proficiency of getting the vaccine out. That's one. There's others. I think there are a lot of questions about masks and the effectiveness of masks. I think another one is that some of the restrictions on small businesses really didn't go well at all with our constituents. They were sitting there watching Walmarts and all the big box stores running full blast and doing record level sales and profits, and all the mom and pops were shut down. And now, as a result of that, in my district, and I'm sure it's true statewide, we've got businesses that will never come back. They're gone. So they've been seriously injured and destroyed by that ruling in favor of big box stores, which, again, makes no sense. And I think that was another mistake that we made.
Yeah, and because that took a lot of people, I guess, when you had to shut your business down and you look down the street and the Lowe's parking lot is just full of people. That it didn't seem fair. But the other component of that, Representative, the church services and not allowing a religious gathering seems unconstitutional, not really in the spirit of anything. That not only does that, an infringement on liberties and rights, but the possibility it could have resulted in legal action taken against the state and come at taxpayers' expense had to be something to be evaluated.
Absolutely, and it's just dead wrong. It violates the Constitution, as you pointed out, the U.S. Constitution. So yeah, it's that was dead wrong. I think our churches and church leaders could make really intelligent decisions, just like all the citizens could over time. When you learn something about the pandemic and what the precautionary areas are, I think the church leadership would have made the right decisions, and it would have been just as well off, if not better. Spiritually and every other way, if we had done a much more subtle reminder to our worship services and our church leaders, rather than forbidding them from assembling, that was a mistake. You're absolutely right.
And to kind of put a finishing touch on this topic before we move on, I guess they had to move a primary election, and that was done with, by the executive order, and everybody kind of went along with it and was okay with it. But if that election had been different, if that primary, Republican primary or Democrat primary had been any different, that could have been another one of these instances where you were locked in some kind of illegal proceedings.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
So I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities or reasons the legislature maybe should have been involved in this process a little more than it had been last year.
Well, the key word I keep hearing is that the people did not have a voice with the governor's office. She was the decision maker, and we've already talked about why that's important. You can't have a mass body of 145 people making those kind of decisions on the fly. You've got to have a responsible executive to start that rolling and protect the people of our state. But, you're right.
Lastly, I want to hit on this related, not related at all, actually, Representative, the Monument Preservation Act. There's a lot of discussion about tweaking it some way. A lot of people will want to do away with it. You want to take it the other direction and strengthen the penalties. Do you anticipate any movement on that this year?
I do. We're pushing it hard. I'm encouraged to see that this finally got on the schedule on the committee here in the House on that version of the bill. And it does expand the powers, and this is by design, because our Attorney General struggled with a way to enforce the 2017 version of our Monument Preservation Act, and they needed some help to strengthen up their options of prosecuting the lawbreakers and making it clearer and making the list of misdeeds a little broader so that they could cover the waterfront. And so that was mainly why we did that, to strengthen it in the drafting of this bill, to strengthen those options. And I think it's needed. This is a very popular statewide issue. In fact, nationwide, polling in 2017, right after our monument bill was passed, nationwide polling from NPR and National Public Television, probably one of the two most left-leaning liberal organizations in the nation, ran polls on this, and 62% said they wanted their monuments protected. That's nationally. And then right after, at the end of the year 2020, a few months ago, was another poll, signal poll, was done in Alabama only, and likely Republican voters only. 86% said they wanted their monuments protected. So our people want this done. They don't want to see their history destroyed right before their eyes without us doing anything about it.
And you know, on the other hand, though, I guess some of the cities that take action in their own hands and move these monuments. It's happened down here in Mobile with the Admiral Sims statue. That they would like to see maybe some of these penalties roll back. But talk about that aspect of it, about why what needs to be. Or what do you think needs to be done to shore up this law, to shore up this legislation?
Well, increasing the penalties certainly is one. These big cities sneeze at a $25,000 fine. Their budgets are so big. When that 2017 bill, one-time fine of $25,000 for violating this 2017 act, just was nothing. It was a slap on the wrist, and it was just like an entrance ticket to go and destroy whatever monuments you wanted to destroy. That's what it was like. And that was part of our problem. That's why we decided to do this. But this bill carries a penalty of $10,000 per day until the monument is restored or replaced. $10,000 per day.
That would be a big deterrent right there. Right now it's just that one lump sum, but $15,000. But now you're talking per day that it's going to be in the language, and that would be the deterrent.
You need to make a decision or make a reconciliation, an agreement, to reach an agreement to stop that clock from running if you're in that position. First of all, it would inspire you, I hope, to prevent it from happening. There's a reason these monuments are where they are. Our ancestors either went to the spot of the event that they're memorializing, or any other public place where these monuments could be seen and read and understood, so that they would remind us of our history. We don't forget our history or continue to try to change our history. It's there for everyone to see. And so I don't see that. Giving the counties and the cities the power to move these, it's not going to work. It's going to the cities have a much higher level of minorities, and they're going to move all their the monuments that history has placed there out and put their own monuments in, and this is going to further resegregate our nation.
Representative, we're going to leave it there, but we do appreciate you making time for us. I know the business of the legislature awaits you, but we're very appreciative of you coming on this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. That was State Representative Mike Holmes on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
She knows when to cheat and when to tell her lover to leave her. She knows they'll be safe just as long as his show goes on.